We met at Skinker in Del Mar and in a back lot, and he gets in a van, and I did not like what I saw. I didn't trust this kid further than I could throw him. He grew up in the 8th District, and he was one of the most violent guys I ever met. Every spidey sense in my police self was saying.
Welcome back, listeners, to The Brighter Side of Blue, our worldwide podcast, coming to you live for the last time from the Blue Line Studios. I'm Danny.
I'm Tommy.
I'm JJ.
Tommy, where are we? We're moving on up.
We're going back home.
We're going back to the house.
If you guys have listened to the show, you guys know that we used to frequent Columbo's quite a lot, and there's a story out there in one of our episodes, and we'll probably retell that when we
many get to stories.
Columbo. Yeah. But we're partnering with Greg and Ryan Columbo, who currently run Columbo's. They're located at 6487 Manchester. And we're going into the basement, and it's kind of that rustic look with those with the old brick and some games down there and some high tables, and we think it's going to be really cool, and we're looking forward to going back home because it's kind of where we all hung out back in the day. And
this is an amazing circle back.
Right.
It's kind of like how this whole idea started, right?
Yeah, yep. 100%. Yeah. So we're partnering with Greg and Ryan, and they are providing us a studio, a real studio. Jack, you're going to be so happy.
And then the other cool thing is that, and not right away, but down the road, once we get acclimated to the studio, we're going to invite any listeners to come join us. They've got high tables around there. It's not a huge place, but come down, have dinner, you know, some appetizers, have a few cocktails. We usually tape around 5:30, and we'll be handing out those dates. So,
you know, if you go to Columbo's right now, you get these.
Look at that.
You order a cocktail from Columbo's, you get the Columbo's cup.
Then you get the backside.
And the backside's the brighter side
so
of
that's
blue.
What they're serving all their beers and stuff.
Yep. Anything that you buy at Columbo's now has the Columbo's and the brighter side of blue.
And they'll be selling our merch there. So that's if we're not taping that night, you just jump on the high. You know, and Columbo's is perfectly located right between Highway 40 and Highway 44.
Exactly.
So either highway you take home. Or in to go to a ball game, you can jump off. It takes 2 minutes to get to Columbo's.
Manchester and Mitchell Avenue. It's been there since 1951. Grandpa Columbo was a huge law enforcement supporter. And then his son Mike came from Hussman Refrigeration and took over the operation. And then Ryan graduated from SLU, and then Gregory did, and then Ryan came along, and it's a family of law enforcement, the Blue Wave. They've been a part of the Blue Wave forever.
Now, did you know them before this, or you just happened to stumble in their bar one day?
No, I've known them since for 37 years. I met Grandpa Columbo before I met Greg, Ryan, or their dad, Mike. I knew Grandpa.
So you're responsible for becoming sort of...
Police bar?
Yes.
I honestly do think that because...
You had a healthy hand in it.
I think I had a healthy hand in it.
6 days a week, healthy.
Yeah, my partner at the time, Frank Siorek, took me there for the very first time. And then
you did that stint in Vice. I think you might have frequented the bar a few times while you were on.
And then I'd give Grandpa Columbo a ride home to his house in Afton, and we'd sit in his house and play cards, play a little poker.
We're going home.
And then
Greg's given us a lot of leeway on how to set the studio up and what he's going to do for us there, and we're going to try to make it as neat as possible and really have fun there.
We're becoming legit.
Yup. We're getting there. Almost. I don't know. And Greg did say that, Jack, you can go ahead and cash your paycheck now. So that's a good thing.
That makes
right?
Jack happy, Producer Jack. No, video guy Jack. I'm sorry, Producer John.
Yeah.
He's a video producer.
Yeah. He produces videos.
Let's get this straight.
You know, and then, I mean, I'm kind of pumped with energy because of all the things we have going in the
Absolutely.
Right direction with the brighter side of blue. And it looks like we're even going to elevate to a, I don't know if producer John or Jack know this, but looks like we're going to be heading towards a web page.
Yep, we're getting a web page built. And
we have one of our avid listeners, an ex-school teacher, Rick. I had a conversation with him, and he's interested in helping us build a web page. He was a
professor, Rick.
Well, I didn't say he's a school teacher. I don't know if he's a professor. I don't think he is.
He's a professor now. You know, we're into field promotion, so
yeah. Well, producer John, are you going to okay this promotion?
Is Rick good?
Wholeheartedly.
All right, Professor Rick.
Welcome aboard, Rick.
Professor Rick.
Our webpage guy.
Our webpage guy. Yep. He's in the house, so that'll be a dynamic change for us.
That'll be a fun change where we can put out a lot of information, and I know Jack's going to work with Professor Rick. Professor now, right?
He's 100% professor, and don't ever, like you do Chiefs a lot of time, you just call him Joe. Like tonight's guest is,
I don't know,
Chief Joe Spies.
I don't know Rick's last name, or I would call him by his last name.
No, okay. It's
now
Professor
I know him
Rick.
As Professor Rick. It's locked in.
JJ, you down with that?
Whatever.
Professor Rick is the dean of web pages.
There you go.
Yeah. I just promoted him again.
He's the Professor Rick, the dean.
He's going to be the head of the Department of Education soon.
Better be a good-ass web page. I can tell you that. So, Jack, can you give us an update on the social media? But I am excited to hear we're now in Romania.
Romania. You got to, you know, I don't know who we got in Romania, but when
I
saw
no,
that.
No, no, no. I know exactly who
Nadia
we have.
Nadia Comaneci.
100%. It's Nadia.
You think
hey, Nadia, thanks for listening. shout out, you know.
Jack, do you know who Nadia Comaneci is?
I know Nadia, but maybe not this one.
Oh, my God.
You know what, though? She's even old. She's old.
But I was just saying, there's a lot of listeners that are like, oh, Nadia Comaneci. Yeah, but Jack's like, who the? She's a she was the
standard
gymnast back in the day. Tens,
first
Olympic.
She's
gymnast.
The first one that got a 10.
And then she was, do you know Mary Lou Retton?
I don't know any of these names. No.
All right. All right. Oh my Tell us God. How we're doing our social media.
Nadia. how old is Nadia?
Because 62.
She still looks unbelievable.
Yep. Oh, producer John just pulled her up.
Damn, John's quick.
Yes.
Yeah, usually Huggy does that, but Huggy's a little under the weather.
Huggy's sick.
Five gold medals, and she's a listener of The Brighter Side of Blue.
Yep.
Hey,
sure
Nadia.
Is. Romania.
Thanks for tuning in.
Yep.
I might have to change my Zen.
Speaking of the mic.
Because I might have to change my Zen.
Why?
Because I had one from Olympic, what's her name, the gal that's in that picture right there.
That's Nadia.
No.
Simone?
Simone Biles.
Yes, yeah, I read one from Simone. It was pretty good. But I'm not sure.
His mic's not pretty hot.
No, he just forgot we're
he's
broadcasting.
He's all flabbergasted.
Hey. He's just looking around.
I'm trying to find this one from her, make it more.
We bring up Nadia Comaneci, who Jack
Hello?
Doesn't even know, and then he gets all flabbergasted.
I'm not going to be able to find it.
So apparently we're not going to get a social media update. Jack, can we get a social media update?
you do that.
We're at millions. It's almost surreal to say, but no, we're at millions of views all across and thousands of likes. And, you know, we're on TikTok is really where we're blowing up, but Facebook's kind of hit a lull, but you know, you can always hit us there. You can hit us on Twitter. You can hit us on Instagram and YouTube. So,
and soon to be our website.
You excited about that web page?
I'm excited for it. I want a hand in that and make sure it looks good. And
we have a professor, dude. We have a dean,
right.
Okay, of web pages doing this. Do you have full confidence now?
Yeah.
Whoa. The hell was that?
That was shaky.
That was really shaky.
That was shaky. Professor Rick, take note.
Yeah. Come on, Jack. Now he's going to be good. He's a dean.
Yeah, I'm excited for it.
All the energy we got going, it's going the right direction.
Loving it.
And we're here, and we're having fun doing it. But I'm going to take it down just a little notch because, Tommy, if we weren't doing this right now, this podcast today, where would you be?
Yeah, today they're having a base at Oakville. We're having a baseball
Oakville
game.
High School here
Oakville
in
High
St.
School.
Not
here
in Romania.
St. And myself and JJ both live in Oakville. And JJ went to Melville, and that'll come into the story.
Uh-oh.
But special event going on there. They're having a day for Coach Bob Kern. And Bob is the assistant coach, a longtime teacher and assistant coach at Oakville. Started at Melville before that. And he is a teacher and the assistant coach for the varsity softball and varsity baseball team. And the head coach is Rich Sturm, and I'm part. You know, we always talk about being part of a family right here, so they're part of a family too. The Oakville family, the community, and Bob's been there for a long time, and Bob recently was diagnosed with lymphoma.
Oh, I know.
So he's in a battle right now, and so they're having a fundraiser for him. They got these BK Strong T-shirts. They're playing Melville.
Oh, wow.
Oh, hell. Oakville Melville.
So everybody's coming out, and he's just a beloved figure that really touched a lot of kids and students and athletes. And when I asked Jack, and Jack, my son, played for the Bob and Rich for 2 years, his junior and senior year, and he just he loved these two guys, but I asked him to give me a couple words about to describe BK. And he said, compassionate, understanding. I'm forgetting one. Understanding. Oh, laid back and awesome.
Wow.
That's four.
So, but he did. Yeah, he threw out in four.
Okay. All right.
But that's just the kind of guy he is. And I'm sorry I couldn't be there. And Jack texted me, and he got caught at work, so he's not even there. Oh, so,
and our thoughts are there.
Our thoughts are there, and those out in the community know that special educators are tough to come by. Well, they're not tough to come by, but there's a lot of them out there. But Bob was really he touched a lot of souls out there, the current and the past players.
Very nice. Now you sit there and mention a segue, compassion. You know, tonight's guest. We'll be introducing soon Chief Joe Spies.
Yeah, Joe Spies from Brentwood. He stopped by, and just like you said, I talked about compassion with Bob Kern, and Joe is going to talk about the other side of police work, where it's not just about locking people up all the time. And he talks about a guy he did lock up, and it was awesome. It was just it's a great story that you guys are going to like.
Well, since we're on this, I might as well say something about. A county police officer, 30 years in the county police department. His son married my niece, Maggie, and he passed away a couple weeks ago unexpectedly. Big softball player. I actually texted Joe today. See, I was going to see if he knew him because apparently he was a big softball guy. Went upstairs to work out and died on his rowing machine.
What's his name?
Rick Stump. Richard Stump. And I got a kind of he married my niece, obviously. I just said that. But I got a kind of a funny story. Because
I think I played softball against him.
Did you really?
Yeah. He was a county copper. Yeah. Did he play on the county softball team?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep, I know.
Cool.
I played against him.
I figured Joe did too.
Yeah. Well, I guarantee Joe does. Yeah.
But yeah. So
Chief Spies does.
So, you know, I get phone calls from recruiters from now. He was a 30-year policeman, then he became a recruiter for the county. So I get these calls from these recruiters all the time. I get tired. They're always looking. They're always want to interview me, ask me about my officers because my officer is going to leave.
They're poaching city officers to take out.
It gets frustrating. So, he calls me, tells me who he is, and I don't know. I don't recognize the name. I just say, oh, yeah, what's up? And he asked me about Schultz, this kid named Schultz who works for me, went to the county, eventually went to the county. And so he says, how is this Matt Schultz kid? I said, oh, he sucks. I go, man, I'm glad you can take him. You can have him. He ain't worth it. And I'm cursing. I'm like, he ain't worth worth an F and blah, blah, blah. And he's going, yeah, I think that you're being sarcastic, aren't you? I start laughing. I go, yeah, dude, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't care what these recruiters think of me, you know.
Right, right, right.
So I go, I'm sorry. I said, yeah, he's a great kid. He's a good plea. I hate to lose him. I'm just getting tired of us losing all these good coppers to the county and all these munis. It just sucks for us.
Yeah.
And he said, I understand. And he says, I go, all right, it's all good. I go, you're getting a good one. He says, oh, by the way, your niece married my son. I go, oh, shit. I go, he goes,
double damn.
He says, Maggie. I go, oh, damn. So I like, all right, I'm sorry. You know, it's nice to meet you. And, you know, good luck. So I hang up. So I call my brother and I said, hey, Dick, Dick's my brother's name. I said, how is your son in law's father? Is he a good dude? Is he, you know, does he curse? He goes, no, I don't think, I never heard him curse. He's real religious and straight. He's kind of a straight arrow guy. He's a policeman, of course.
He stepped in it, JJ.
And I go, well, he knows I curse. He goes, what are you talking about? And he goes, oh, he won't care. He'll think it's funny. I go, I hope so. But, man, I stepped in it a little bit.
Oh,
that is cool.
That's a coincidence.
But he's a good guy, and I feel bad.
You're protecting your people.
Yeah.
You're sick and tired of losing your people.
But his son, Ben, is a good, really good kid, and he's they just crushed him. It was unexpected. But he was an organic farmer. And his dad, they worked hand-in-hand all the time. They both worked together on his organic farm over in Columbia, or Waterloo.
That's cool. That's a good story.
Felt bad, but...
No, you didn't.
You know, no,
you didn't.
No, I thought it was funny.
Hopefully that'll give the family a smile that they might need.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I mean, seriously, is anybody else petrified of what's coming our way?
What you got?
In the Midwest? I mean, what do I have? I have 1 trillion... cicadas.
What?
A trillion cicadas are coming. And these little bastards.
When?
They're an insect. Well, I'll tell you when. I listened to this scientist, and here's when they're coming. They're coming
so
in the Midwest.
So you're breaking it down for us.
I can break it down a little bit.
All right, break it down.
But JJ's a great question. When are they coming?
What's the boundary line?
It's in the Midwest. They have like a red hot zone and Missouri and Kentucky. And but we are in the hot zone.
Really?
Of where they'll be the most dense. But your question of when they're coming, they're coming when the soil temperature hits 64 degrees.
Oh, it's going to be
so June. They're temperamental.
They're prima donna little bastards.
Right. They're like the Prince Andrews.
Well, when it gets 64,
remember when he wouldn't get
out.
In a Crown Vic?
Yeah, he had to
so
get
now
up.
All of a sudden these things can't come out unless it's 64?
64.
And they might be the most annoying creatures ever, though.
A trillion.
A trillion of them. I don't like a trillion of anything.
So,
dollars?
Why? So
that's
many,
a pain in the butt.
I thought they come every 7 years, right?
No. The broods that are coming is the 13-year brood. That's the southern brood. And the 17-year brood. They live under the ground. They must have gotten some kind of tiff underneath there. Because
they're coming together?
They're coming together. And they're going to settle things up top.
So why? So it just so happens that these two groups are coming at the
top? It's a very rare thing. Like I'm saying, some shit went down below, and now they're coming up to settle it.
We'll be dead probably next time they come up.
Well, we did the show outside for the eclipse. We should do it outside for the cicadas.
You would be able to hear us.
Hunter, yeah. Yeah. We'll
call Eli back. He'll think this place is nuts.
No, what you can do is just... If they want to, we just do it before they start.
How long do they live?
Time frame.
They live. I love that idea, John. Because if we do it, I'm gonna punch a cicada.
Well,
yeah. Punch
it,
one.
No, that's how we end the show. We do it, and then when the cicadas start,
we're gonna knock them out.
It's a certain time.
We're getting them right when they come up at first. We got to because apparently when they're all up, it doesn't it get loud.
All right, so the scientist and he tries to make us feel better. He says that they only live 30 days. Hmm. But they're actually, if you want to look on the bright side, the brighter side of cicadas, they're actually doing us a favor because as they push up, they're aerating our lawns.
Oh, I need
and that. Then the reporter asked the scientist, well, how loud will this be? He goes, well, we expect up to a trillion of them, and it would be like the equivalent of everybody having 5 chainsaws going in their backyard. But you get a free aeration.
Dude, I could call the aeration guy for $200, and he's not coming with 5 buddies with chainsaws.
And staying 30 days.
So
he's just going to aerate.
When they die, though, their bodies provide nitrogen to the soil also. And they eat.
I'm glad they're coming.
And they basically prune mature trees by eating leaves. So.
I love it.
Are you endorsing this? Are you okay with this?
I'm down with the cicadas.
I am now, too.
Yeah.
My yard needs it desperately.
I'm leaving the country.
I can't take the noise.
until they're done. But
if they all die, then how do they come back?
How do they? Yeah, I guess where are they right now? They're
underground. The 13 and the 17-year broods are still down below until it gets to 64 degrees.
And then how far down below?
You know, I don't know.
Did you get into all that?
I didn't get into it. I'll find out.
So if I don't want, what if I would put block ice on all my on my yard to keep it from being 64 degrees?
Well, then I think you'll be the only yard that doesn't have cicadas, and you won't get you won't get a free aeration.
Spend a lot of money on ice, though. But I would imagine I'd hear the neighbor's cicadas, so I don't know if it's worth.
What if you got your yard sprayed?
Is there a way to combat them in the ground?
I don't know. There should be. Here's what I'm not cool with. I'm not cool with people making light of this. A trillion things are coming our way that are annoying.
You know what I'm cool with? I'm cool with just changing the subject and go on to another subject.
Jason Grellner, the China's trying to attack us through infrastructure.
He's trying to get
us. And now they're sending them this.
Cicadas.
Hey, I know something. I got a story that can change.
A trillion of them.
Change the subject. I got a Danny story.
Everybody's down for a Danny story.
He's off.
We all know. I don't know. There's a thing called ComStat in the city, and it's in City PD every Thursday. It's a big deal, and they got it. Well, Danny was a major at the time. He's in South Patrol, and he's got a ComStat. Was it the next day you had to do it? Yeah, you don't know where I'm going.
I don't know what your story is.
So he's in there, and he's got to get all this information, and he'll have to present or whatever. So his aide, who is a lieutenant, comes walking out of his office and is muttering. I mean, just mad. And I'm just walking by, like, what the hell's the matter with you? And I'm like, man, he's such an asshole. I go, who? He goes, Howard, Major Howard. I just walked in there with some information to give him. And I walk in, I go, hey, I got all this stuff. And he didn't want to hear it because he's overloaded with information, I guess. He wouldn't want to hear it, so he told me to shut the door. I go, what's wrong with that? He goes, he told me to shut the door but you on the other side.
And I said, that's Danny. He shut that door.
I'd ask.
No.
I remember it exactly. Okay, I'm a gist guy. I need bullet points. I need them quick. Present it. He walked in with a notebook, and I could see it was like pages and pages.
You're going to be there for a minute?
And I was like, there's no, right. It couldn't happen. So he's walking through. Yeah, it's a true story. I hope I didn't hurt his feelings.
I laughed my ass off, though. I thought it was funny and shit.
Does he need a hug?
Because he knows, I'm not going to give you that information. If I was your age, I would just be like, wing it.
Yeah, there you go.
Good luck.
Good luck, brother.
Have at it.
Hey, I think they might talk about that murder last night.
I should have. Well, I hope.
So you remember that?
I do remember that, and I feel bad about the whole thing.
Yeah, you do.
It's very funny.
I'm sorry about that. I brought that up. The cicadas, okay?
You were a dick major at the time.
No, I wasn't.
Nadia Comaneci is not going to like that language.
Yeah.
Is she listening?
No, she's talking about his brother.
You know it is. It's... What happened?
John.
Stop.
Oh, that's a talent, dude.
We've got a screen up here, and John's messing with the screen, so yes, that was funny.
You know what?
Where are we going next, Danny?
Well, I think it's time to chill out a little bit.
Oh.
I think it's time to just bring it down a notch.
Come on, JJ.
I'm not doing Nadia. It was too long, and nothing is impossible. The word itself says, I'm possible.
Look at that.
Look. Go ahead and start, JJ.
Nothing is impossible. The word itself says, I'm possible. If you look at the word, it spells I'm possible.
Oh, okay.
So I'm trying to put it down.
I thought you were just prefacing the Zen moment.
That's it. And that came from a classy woman.
And who sponsored that Zen? That was JJ Zen, sponsored by?
I can't remember. No.
Ed Mesenworth?
Ed Mesplay.
Ed Mesplay. Mesenworth was a policeman. Sorry about that.
Ed Mesplay from Republic Insurance. He does... He does health insurance and Medicare. He's an expert for 25 years. He's been doing this sponsorship for a while. His number is 636-850-8430.
And can Nadia,
I'm not sure if that's
can
right.
Nadia reach that number from Romania? Just stop.
You're all right.
JJ turned Zen into
Google
like a Wordle. It's like Wordle.
Google Ed.
Google Ed Mesplay.
That's not Zen, then. That's JJ's Wordle.
I forgot I was even doing it.
You're good. Ed'll understand. Ed has known you for a long time.
Yeah.
He's going to understand that. That
sorry,
was a great.
Sorry, Ed.
I think it was a great one.
Yeah. Oh, no. I think it's one of his worst.
I think
it was great.
It's bottom.
Audrey Hepburn said that, man.
Audrey Hepburn?
Yes.
I'm impossible.
If you put the word impossible and look at it, it's
right.
Actually, if you split it
I'm
up,
possible.
It says, I'm possible.
That was good.
Jack ain't down. Okay. I'll read Nadia's
Jack
in a minute.
Jack actually hit it with a thumbs down right away.
No, I didn't like it at all. It was a Wordle. It was like a crossword. It was like some kind of play on words.
Right.
It wasn't Zen.
Sorry, Ed Mesplay.
Didn't put me at peace.
JJ's going to have to get better.
He only is doing 10 weeks. I'll do an extra week for him.
Yeah, he gets a refund.
Oh, definitely. That is possible.
Do we have to start getting involved in these?
How many have we done for him?
It seems like about 36.
Yeah.
But this one doesn't count.
No, way more than five. Oh, way more than five.
Way more than five. Because I know his number by heart now. I think Nadia knows his number by heart.
Right. Say it again.
636.
840-8530. I got it.
Once again, Google Ed Mesplay.
Talk amongst yourselves.
All right. You know what?
Mesplay. Just Google that.
Republic Insurance. Good one.
Let's get a all quote right. from Ed himself for the next.
Yeah. Right. Ed needs a farmer's
knife. Right. One actually.
All right.
You know, we got the eclipse. We have cicadas, and then we got some crap over in Dubai.
Oh, did you see that?
Yes, I have.
They seeded the clouds.
They what?
They did what's called cloud seeding, and the apparently it's obviously it's pretty hot over there throughout the year. So what their thought plan was. Is that we will try to alternate the clouds, bring down the temperature. Well, it worked. And they got rained on for like 6 days straight. They might still be being rained on. I haven't checked on it lately. I mean, cars floating down the street. It was crazy. The whole country was just underwater.
I mean, they went against Mother Nature, and it worked?
Yeah, and hey, the old FAFO. You don't mess with Mother Nature.
No.
Apparently, they don't do that over there. I mean, I do understand their want to not be a, you know, barren desert, but unfortunately they got to deal with that, and they don't want to deal with it anymore. So they did that cloud seeding.
Cloud seeding. Never heard of it. Producer John, have you heard of it?
It here, I believe.
636-240-8530. That's 636-240-8530. Ed Mesplay, call him for your Medicare and health insurance. He's an expert.
Good.
Does he do flood insurance too?
I got Tommy on that one.
We have any listeners in Dubai, call.
All right.
So, producer,
that was good. That was a good ending to Dubai. Just saying, hey, call Ed Mesplay.
Yeah, you got.
If anybody in Dubai, we don't know if we got anybody in Dubai. I think we need to call out for Dubai.
They may need health insurance now.
We need a listener in Dubai, and then they got their guy.
They literally seed the clouds.
Yeah, this says aircraft drop small particles like silver iodide into the clouds. Water vapor can then condense more easily and turn into rain.
Sounds like we shouldn't recommend it.
Is Dubai sponsoring us?
Oh, no. Time to move on?
No, why are we talking so much about Dubai?
Okay,
because it was a flood, JJ. It was a flood. It was kind of interesting to me.
We had to improvise while we were looking up Ed's.
I thought
we were
the brighter side of blue police stuff.
But every once in a while, you got to throw in a flood.
These are things that affect us and law enforcement. Law enforcement had to deal with.
Affect us?
And an insurance.
And insurance.
We're trying to help your guy, Ed Mesplay. I'll talk about floods and insurance.
He's going to be pissed when he starts getting people calling for flood insurance.
Like, we're sorry, Mr.
I think that's a pretty good gig for Ed in the Midwest.
Like, we apologize, Mr. I am possible.
Shit.
Nothing is impossible.
Impossible.
That was a weak ass.
I'll make it up next week.
Okay.
I'm possible.
Focus, JJ. Producer John.
Yes.
Are you bringing anything from the newsroom.com this week? Uh-oh, made Tommy uncomfortable.
No, go ahead.
Well, I am, because I found an article that encompasses three different subjects that we like to talk about.
Cicadas?
Murder. It's got murder in it.
All right.
It's got meth in it.
Oh, everybody loves meth.
And maybe one of our most favorite subjects, Bigfoot.
Love me some Bigfoot now.
All rolled into one.
Newsroom.com story.
Let's go.
Yesterday, before he starts, I'm flipping channels, and there was a sighting of a Bigfoot, and I almost believed it. This family out in the middle of somewhere, country, and the dog took off after it, and I was kind of mesmerized by this. I don't know where it came from. It was a big-ass, hairy creature. But anyway, that's all I got to say. I'm not a believer, but...
I love the shows, but I'm not down with the fact that they might be out there. About Bigfoot are good.
Okay.
But let's hear the story about Bigfoot.
Okay. Oklahoma fisherman who thought his friend was trying to feed him to Bigfoot convicted of murder.
So maybe that's the headline?
Maybe Bigfoot does exist.
He needs some food. Oh, here we got the... that's him?
Yeah.
Is this Bigfoot or Big Ears? Because look at the ears on that guy. He can hear us now.
He can hear us
from that mugshot.
He can hear it from the penitentiary.
He's in an orange jumpsuit.
This is Larry Doyle Sanders. Here's how the story reads. It's pretty good. A man who claimed he killed his friend because he believed the victim was summoning Bigfoot, and he was convicted of murder. Larry Doyle Sanders was found guilty by an Oklahoma judge. This is in 22. His buddy, Jimmy Knighton, was strangled to death in July of 22 while out fishing with Sanders. After waiving his right to jury trial, Sanders' attorney reported he claimed that he was acting in self-defense. Oh, anyway.
Wow.
So Sanders and Knighton, instead, they weren't gigging for frogs. They were noodling.
They were noodling.
I can see where meth's going to come in play, though.
Sanders claims that three Sasquatch-looking figures came out of the woods and came up by the river.
Can I interrupt little...
Oh, please do.
This is the first time I've ever heard three getting sighted at one time.
That's the meth, brother.
Yeah. So he said Sanders believed that Knighton was trying to kill him and send his body down the river as a sacrifice to Bigfoot. So the paper reported that was reporting on this, reported that a forensic psychiatrist testified that Sanders was suffering from methamphetamine-induced psychosis. That's the, you know, the meth angle.
Yes, got you. We picked that up.
Yeah, I just thought for you laymen out there that I would
Nadia,
that.
That's meth.
And believed he was defending himself. So you know, they had a fight. Sanders eventually put him in a chokehold and killed him.
Choked him out.
So Sanders faces up to life in prison without parole. And here's a quote from Jimmy Knighton's obituary. Jimmy truly enjoyed anything and everything outdoors, except for getting strangled by his buddy. He loved to fish. He loved to hunt, ride four-wheelers, and most of all, drink his beer around a big bonfire. Jimmy never met a stranger and would give you the shirt off his back.
What the hell? Right, and Jimmy.
Because meth.
That
to,
is.
To Jimmy Knighton.
To Jimmy hey, Knighton. Yeah. Jimmy. What else we got, Tommy?
Oh, today I talk with a guy that's going to be coming on the show. And he is currently doing and getting together a documentary on Christian Ferguson. That kid that was malnutritioned and he had a coma, which left him pretty much invalid. And the father and the mother, you know, the father has been convicted and is in jail now. But this guy doing the documentary has interviewed the father in jail. He's interviewed the mother. He's interviewed the family members. He's interviewed policemen.
Where is this from?
What's that?
Where is this? Where did this happen at?
In St. Louis.
Oh, really?
Ferguson.
Yeah.
Actually, there was a
I thought you said his name was.
That's his last name. His name's Christian Ferguson, but it happened in Ferguson also. Well, Ferguson, St. Louis City. There was a lot of.
That's what freaked me out.
It was probably back when you were living in Wyoming. But
just talking to this guy, it was fascinating what this guy's learned during his preparation for the documentary. And just the stories he's heard from the parents, and he was telling me some of them, but he's agreed to come on the show, but he just wants to wait for the right time. And we'll learn a lot about that case and his making of the documentary, which I found fascinating when I was talking to him.
Where is it going to be played on? Netflix or?
He doesn't know. He does this himself.
Oh, so he's.
He does all the shooting himself, and he's videotaped all these interviews.
Does he know Jack?
I don't think he knows Jack. I didn't ask him specifically, but I don't think he knows Jack. And he's a little older than Jack.
Well, then Jack won't know him because he don't know anybody
over Jack's the age cut of off age 50. Like 35. Yeah, 50.
Jack only knows like people on four sides either side of him. That's it. Anybody than that, he doesn't know him. Never heard of him.
You know what Jack did, though? Jack hired some new people. He's introducing some new people. What's their names?
Got Rob, the editor, and Jake, the assistant video producer.
Yep.
Now, let's just get this straight, though. We aren't his only podcast, because we sure in hell aren't paying him enough to afford all those guys. So.
No.
We're not even his most successful podcast yet, are we?
No.
You guys are up there. You guys are doing really great.
About the one that you told us you worked with, Derek? I just find Derek to be... Tell us about that podcast.
Tell us a little bit about it. Derek's in St. Louis. He has Down syndrome, and he loves talking about the WWE. So that's
what's the name of his podcast?
Loves the Cardinals, loves the Blues.
What's the name of that podcast, Jack?
Called Baker Bantering.
Okay.
Their last name is Baker, so that's why they call it the Bakers, you know, so...
And that's it. You have fun doing that, I'm sure.
Oh, man.
Does he like the police? You name everybody but the police.
I think they're good. They're good people. So I would say, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, shout out to the Baker.
And
shout
Derek.
Out to the Baker.
Yep.
Baker Bantering.
Shout out to Derek and the Bakers. And yeah, I've seen him on TikTok before. And he does. He really loves the WWE and wrestling in general. And he's just a funny character. And he's genuine and a joy to watch.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it.
What else? Oh, hey, so one of our guests before, Nikki Bottolato.
Oh, yeah.
And she talked a lot about child, you know, child trafficking. So producer John and I were talking, and, you know, the case that I'm sure by the time this airs, there'll be a lot of, you know, you might have heard about the case. But if you haven't, this, how old is he, John? 79?
He was like 64.
64.
The suspect?
The suspect, a 64-year-old man, shows up to meet a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old at a hotel. But it was the police in the hotel. Wow. They set him up.
What a creeper.
And then this is what happened.
There you go. It's the time to Seattle people. Gun. Shots fired. Shots fired. Suspect down. Help the officer.
These type of people show up at hotels to, you know, with these arranged meetings with these children for sex. And she just, I just said, is this unusual for a suspect to show up with a pistol? And she said, completely rare. You know, there might be something in his background, but, you know, it's not the norm. So we don't know enough about the whole situation, but we do know is, you know.
He's, what was he coming to do?
What year was this?
This was like a week ago. Like
10 days ago.
Are you shitting me? I don't watch the news, obviously.
It's sad, the news.
It's right. Depressing.
Yes, it's best not to watch it.
Go back to this guy. Damn. Years. But, wow, that's hard to watch.
Well, I thought it had a lot to do with Nikki being on, and I thought that, you know, and to get her statement on it was producer John got her statement on that.
Can we plug Nikki's organization again?
Yes.
Innocent-warriors.com. That's she's kind of dedicating, you know, her energy to helping these kids who are victims of this human trafficking.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's a good very plug, good. John. And that just shows you how dangerous that job was.
He was drawing rare, that gun immediately.
Right.
Door opening, he was drawing that gun. Wow. Yep. Okay, that was a lot to see.
Those are evil people.
Yeah, that's evil. All around evil.
Yep.
Evil and violent. Yep. Okay. Let's move on, Tommy.
I guess something brighter we can talk about.
Yeah, brighter. Yeah. Well, I mean, that was good. Good. I mean, whatever. Okay. Tommy, what do you got?
Good banter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're heading back to
when are we going back?
Hey.
Next show, we'll be back at Columbo's, baby.
I got a good story about my shirt. Did I tell you?
Oh, no.
Yeah, what happened?
I was walking in the grocery store, Schnucks, local grocery store, and this young gal was walking, and she kind of smiled, like, I don't know, she's smiling or laughing, and I was like, what is she, you know? And she definitely looked at me. I thought maybe my zipper was down or something.
Yeah.
So
your merge zipper was down.
Yeah, it was not down. So my merge zipper. So then, you know, how you get in grocery stores and you end up seeing the same person again. You go down an aisle, come back. So she came, all of a sudden she had come around the corner and she's right in front of me and she started laughing. She goes, I love that shirt. And it's Defundy's Nuts.
Defundy's Nuts.
I love that shirt. She goes, my brother is a police officer. Can I take a picture of that shirt? So absolutely. I said, sure. So I did it, showed her, told her about the podcast, and she said, I'll never listen to it, but thanks. No.
She flew to Romania.
Yeah. She really was nutty coming each. Definitely. But no, she was cool, and she wanted to take a picture. She thought it was funny. So, yeah,
that's cool.
That's awesome.
It's kind of a funny shirt, though.
That is cool.
It is a funny shirt, and we mean it.
We do.
Yeah.
And if you want one, you know where you can get those too from now on?
Columbo's.
You can go there down there, and we're going to give them supply.
I'd like to give them all of them. Mm-hmm. So they get them out of my house.
That's cool. You know what else? You know what else you're going to be able to get at Columbo's?
What's that?
You can get a haircut. You know why?
How's that?
Because Gregory Columbo's wife, Katie, she's a hairdresser. She does hair. She
don't
can cut,
do it.
She can cut your hair.
Hey,
hold out.
First show.
I don't know about all that.
Video Jack, what do you think?
I'm with you.
I think we should set.
Throw it.
Yeah. I say we need.
Oh, you want to keep it?
Tom,
we should have some kind of landmark that we hit with the podcast to do it. Maybe the year anniversary or.
Thousand
we get,
subscribers.
Or we get our,
sort.
Yeah, our 5 million subscriber or something, you know.
I don't know how long.
Our 3 trillion cicadas.
You know, my wife does have a say-so. And
no, she
it's
does.
getting pretty long. But I'm down with you guys. If we get 1,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Katie Columbo's cutting it off.
What do you think about getting that tight? Remember back in the day you get that the mullet with the tight perm in the back?
I think Huggy said that, didn't he?
Huggy wanted me to go 2 inches above the ear, you know, like Theo Vaughn kind of stuff.
Hey, you shave your head once for cancer, so you might as well
do something crazy. Do it for Nadia.
Do a mohawk.
No, that's not happening. I'm not going to go too crazy. I mean, I'll get a haircut, but I ain't right. going too crazy.
Okay, you're not committing anything. All right, where are we? When are we moving in to our new house?
So we'll be there next week to do our first taping, and we'll be with Greg Columbo, and then we've got Bill McDonough after that talking about a murder case that's interesting. And an 81-year-old, fortunately, 81-year-old grandmother was killed by her grandson. So we listen to that story.
Sounds so energetic and fun and lighthearted.
It's a murder story, goddammit.
Can I have a large deluxe Colombo's pizza with a side of chicken wings while we're there?
Absolutely.
You can.
Oh, people are going to love
this.
So
that'll be fun.
Thanks to Greg and Ryan for bringing us home.
And that's just a start. So again, I think we're calling that more of a partnership. We hope to bring them business with our listeners coming down there to hang out with us and have dinner and listen to the show down there with us in the basement and get a good meal, have some laughs.
Get a good cup, too.
And get a cup. You get this sweet-ass cup, too, to go.
For sure. Because
you know you're not going to drink enough. You just need that to-go cup on the way home.
Yeah, with iced tea.
In the Uber.
In the Uber with iced tea.
You don't want to come in there and Uber with a
All right,
bottle.
Let's get to Chief. Let's get to
Hold
Chief.
On.
Okay.
One thing I want to do before we get to the Chief is the mission statement.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's very important to us. And again, you guys all know why we're here. We repeat it every show. We just want to memorialize all the great stories and the great characters that are within the police departments nationwide, especially we're starting here local. And we just wanted to memorialize that and humanize the police profession. We're just normal human beings that decided to be policemen and have the same issues as everybody else does. But and you're going to hear with Joe Spies coming up and his story with D'Angelo. Great story.
Compassionate.
It's a very compassionate story. And having some other laughs with Joe. But just a side note, Danny and producer John, unfortunately, we're not here Thursday. They were on vacation.
It was
so
cool.
So it's just me and Jim.
Not together.
It was cool.
Not together.
We had a really good time.
Good. Get used to it.
Hey, I got a last question before you go to Spies. How old is Nadia Comaneci?
62. We already went through that.
I'm just shocked. She
November 12th, 1961.
Producer John's got her up on the screen. Yeah. JJ's infatuated. She's infatuated.
She looks better now than she ever did.
Okay.
Well, I don't know about
right. You tracked her throughout the years, huh?
No, I haven't. I don't know why I know that, but they got other pictures up there. And
she was like 13 when she was in the Olympics.
Was she really?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
You know what she is? She's I Am Possible.
Yep. She took that to back 100%. In the day.
Yeah. 100%.
She didn't say getting 10s was impossible. She said, I'm possible.
The worst Zen yet.
Uh-oh.
You have to have a best one and a worst
right.
one. Now everything else.
Okay, well, you knocked the worst one out of the park, bro. Congrats.
Sorry,
got all
best
that
played.
One.
Sorry, Ed.
Yeah, Ed.
He got. Hey, you know what? The bad ones are good for Ed. Well, he must have talked to him about it for 5 minutes.
Right. He got 5 minutes.
He's like,
that.
Do another bad one next week too, buddy, and get my phone number right.
All right.
Enjoy our conversation with Chief
636-248.
Blue Wave continues.
Let's roll.
Rock and roll.
Peace.
All right. All right. Welcome
Neither
back.
Do I.
We are at another Blue Line Roundtable, and Joe Spies, the Brentwood Chief of Police, has stopped by, and we'll always put him on the show when he stops by.
Hi, Thomas.
Large contributor to the show, fan of the show.
He's not a financial contributor, though.
What?
He's got a lot of money. He said,
it's early.
Right.
I'm judging the success of this adventure.
But the one reason that I wanted to bring Joe on today is to talk about an individual. You've heard about all the people that, you know, our guests have locked up, investigated, and they all end up in jail. And Joe has a similar case, but when this guy came out of jail, it was just a neat story. And Joe, the fella's name is D'Angelo. Tell us a little about the case that you were working, who you were working with, what time in your career you were working with it, and why Mr. went to jail.
So at the time I was assigned to the intelligence division working for Lieutenant Hager, who has been on your show, later to become Captain Hager.
Major.
And we were investigating, and then Major, yeah. But we were investigating a drug ring in St. Louis that had ties to Los Angeles. They were bringing in a lot of dope out of L.A., and we found out that D'Angelo was one of the lower rung guys, but he was pumping a lot of dope onto the street. So the idea was we were going to focus on D'Angelo, who went by Low. So we were going to try and put a case on Lowe so that he would snitch.
You weren't trying to put a case on him. You were trying to develop a case on him. That's a hard word.
Haters in the end.
Hey, we got a lot of haters out there that could tear that one up, but go ahead.
We wanted to develop a case, prosecutable case. Is that right, better, Tom? Right.
There you go.
Thank you.
On D'Angelo.
Thank you.
So that he would flip on the guy that we were really targeting, which was a guy named Antonio Johnson, who went by Yum Yum. That was his nickname in the streets. And he was hooked up with a guy named Keith Williams, who owned a store over at Page and Pendleton. It was an organization of guys that were selling dope in St. Louis. Really typical stuff, but they were on the upper side of the weight that they were selling. So we started investigating D'Angelo. We weren't the only ones, as we come to find out, that were looking at him. But we did a case on D'Angelo, got him with some heroin. There was also guys, other detectives that were looking at him, and they also had a case on him. So he was backed up because he was already convicted. And so when we arrested D'Angelo, we brought him into the station, and he decided he wanted to try and help himself. So Lowe was probably one of the more colorful guys I ever locked up. Funny, was one of those guys that... when I first met D'Angelo, I always liked him. I first met D'Angelo when I was a couple years, maybe a year prior to this, in the old Cabinet Courts.
Oh, wow.
My partner had called in on vacation day, so my dumb ass went out, was riding around in the 7th District by myself, the old 7th District.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this is a year before we caught D'Angelo. Yeah. And I hear multiple shots fired. I'm talking 20 or 30 rounds. And they're right near me, but I'm not exactly sure where. And I'm on a dead-end street in the 7th District, and here comes D'Angelo and another dude, guns in hands, running through a gangway right at me. I'm by myself. You know, I think I'm with my six-shot revolver.
Reload if necessary.
And they ran right by my detective car and into a car, and I flip around on them, and I chase them. And they pull over, and they bail out of the car. And the guy that I'm young now, I'm in good shape, and I can run.
Long time ago?
Yeah, I got D'Angelo, and he drops the gun, and he gives up. And he told me that later that day, and it ended up being a case where they were involved. They went up and tried to assassinate a guy in the Cabinet Courts, missed him. We didn't have a victim. That case went nowhere. But he told me later that day, I said, you know, when I'm interviewing him, I said, you could have got me when you came out of the gangway. He goes, I will never hurt a policeman. And I always remember that about D'Angelo, and I always admired him for it. He was in the game, and he was a killing machine, but he would never hurt a policeman. So he always had a little place in my heart because of it. Fast forward, though, it wasn't like we weren't trying to put Lowe in penitentiary.
Right.
We get a
he
case.
He was doing wrong.
Oh, yeah, he was. Right. And so by the time that we dunce into him a year later, he's now advanced well into the heroin game, and he's selling a lot of heroin.
And has moved up in the game.
Area Cabinet Courts still?
Right.
Really, it was anything in the 8th District. Okay. I'm surprised that you didn't know him.
Well, Cabinet Courts has not gotten any
did
better.
Did you ever run into him when you were in the 8th District?
What, the Cabinet's in the 7th?
7th, yeah. Right.
That's where he liked to sell his dope. Okay. Yeah.
That's still shithole.
So about 6 months prior to us locking him up, as part of this case on Antonio Johnson and Keith Williams, they tried to assassinate Lowe as he came into his apartment over right in the 7th District there. He came in through the common entrance, got shot 6 times, and almost killed him. It was real close. They blew his right hand. He never had a good use of his right hand again. So, again, now we're fast forward. Now we've got him in custody, and he's snitching. And he laid out the whole organization, said he told us how the dope was coming in and out of Los Angeles, and we start the case in earnest on Antonio Johnson and Keith Williams, using him as, and he was pumping us information on a regular basis. And during this time, probably about 3 months after he started snitching for us, the 3rd District got a call for a guy wrapped up in a blanket over. He was in a rug, rolled up, and shot 9 times, if I recall. Well, everyone knew that was the guy that had shot D'Angelo a few months earlier, a year earlier. So we bring D'Angelo in. Homicide wants to talk to him. We're like, hey, dude. And he's snitching for us at the time. And we're like, hey, they found whatever the guy's name was with a bunch of holes in him over. And he never confessed to us, but he just smiled.
And that was how the world was then, you know.
Gave you the old little wink, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but that's how the world was, you
right.
know. It was,
well,
it, just getting it was street justice, and I'm not condoning it,
right.
but we certainly couldn't prove
well,
it either.
And I think, too, is
so
that,
you never did prove that he was the one. That
we couldn't, no. Homicide never put that case on.
Okay.
And when you get into that game, that dope game, they all realize that there's a possibility. It's just like getting into the mafia, the old Sammy the Bull and – and that they there's rules in that whole game. And if you break the rules, there'll be people out ready to kill you.
Yeah,
you know, that's just the way life is.
That's the way it was. But when we started working with Lowe, the first, I'll never forget it, my partner at the time was Joe Myers, one of the best guys I ever worked with in the police department. But Joe and I were in a van, and we Lowe was very cautious, obviously. He didn't want to be seen around the police, obviously. So we met at Skinker in Del Mar and in a back lot, and he gets in a van, and I did not like what I saw. I didn't trust this kid further than I could throw him. He grew up in the 8th District, and he was one of the most violent guys I ever met. But again, he wouldn't hurt a policeman.
Yeah.
But he gets in this van, and I'm like, every spidey sense in my police self was saying.
Pull that van over?
No. He got in our van. We were in an undercover van.
Oh, okay.
And he stepped in that van, okay. And I was like, get out of the van. And my partner looked at me, asked, we get him out, he's got a 9mm pistol in his waistband. And anyway, so we take his gun, we didn't lock him up, but we said, hey, dude, you cannot do this. You cannot.
Please don't do this no more.
You can't do this, you know. But, you know, hey, you can tell just by my 5 minutes of that story, there were people hunting him.
Right.
Not us, necessarily, but the bad guys, other gang members, other dope men were after him hard. And we took his thumper. He always called it a thumper. He goes, I don't go anywhere without a thumper. And he called me Joe Man. As we got our relationship, you know, after he started snitching, he used to call me Joe Man. He goes, Joe Man, I never go anywhere without a thumper. So, okay. So fast forward, the case goes. And we get Antonio Johnson and Keith Williams tied up in a conspiracy case out of Los Angeles, including their source. And we take the case off. And it culminated with Lowe ordering up dope, and we had all these search warrants signed and ready to go. They had a car wash. Yum Yum had a car wash. You might remember it over at Del Mar. It was all the Crips and Bloods from L.A. were in there all the time, and so we had all these warrants. It's a great case. D'Angelo did a great job as an informant, including taped calls and a whole nine yards. He was all in on the on being.
He was having fun
doing it. Well, it was either that or he was going to go to the penitentiary for 25 years,
right?
Because he was backed up bad on the dope cases he had. So we do all these cases. We end up locking up Antonio Johnson, Keith Williams, the L.A. guys, the whole nine yards. They all the federal prosecutors did the case, and so fast forward a couple months later, now it's time to go to the
trial.
Well, it's the first. He's got to come to the grand jury and testify. He's got to, you know, we have to turn over these tape recorded calls that we had a lot of them over the course of this investigation. And so he comes into the office and he said, Joe, man, I can't do it. I go, what can't you do? He goes, I can't do it. I can't testify. I go, Lo, you've done everything that you had to do. Now because the feds were promising him, you know,
leniency.
Relief from his cases in state court. We already had the state prosecutors involved in it. I'm not saying he would have got a complete pass on his state cases, but I'm pretty confident he might have. And he was literally looking at 20, 25 years in the penitentiary in state court. And he wouldn't do it. I said, you're going to go to prison for 25 years. And he goes, I'll go. So that's what happened. We went to trial. We presented all the evidence, all the calls, all the drugs, all everything we had. Everybody got convicted, including Lowe. And he went to prison for, I think, 22 years.
Jeez.
Yeah.
But there is an ending to this story that is, you know, again, just as I led into this story, I say how we all lock people up, and that's all fine and dandy, and that's great. But Lowe comes out of jail, and where are you at when Lowe comes out of jail, and what happens?
Yeah, so he does about 18 years off his 22-year sentence. And at the time, and I just like to reiterate and really emphasize, this is one of the most violent kids I ever dealt with as a policeman. not to me and not to an officer, but this guy was a killing machine. The guy in the rug wasn't the only guy he ever killed in his life. So While I liked him, I didn't trust him.
Right.
Further than I could throw him. And I always thought in my mind that he thought I was the one that really screwed him and put him in a penitentiary for most of his adult life, you know. And I was. Joe and I, Myers and I both, you know, wasn't our choice, but that's the way his life ended, you know. Anyway, so I'm now the police chief in Brentwood. Many, 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 many years later, I had retired as a major from the city police department and took a job in the Brentwood Police Department as the chief of police. And Tom Bottini was working the desk.
And just to put it in, you were a detective at the time when this happened.
Yeah, that's how long ago.
So there's a lot of steps in there along the way. So, yeah, go ahead.
Again, he was in the penitentiary.
Now, how old is he right now?
So I'll share that with you, but it's actually part of the story. So Bottini, who was a retired city sergeant, and I had hired as a law enforcement analyst in the city of Brentwood, sitting at the desk and inbox.
He's good at it, too.
He's very good at it. And a great friend and a great guy. Anyway, Lowe walks into the Brentwood Police Department just out of the blue after he got out of the penitentiary, and he said, I'd like to speak to Chief Spies. Well, Lowe presents himself as a guy to a guy like Tom Bottini. He's a kid that was a hood guy, but now he's 50-something years old, right? So Tommy says, hey, he said, wait, he comes in my office. He goes, you know some guy named D'Angelo? I go, yeah. He said he's in the vestibule. He wants to talk to you. I go, is he armed? And Bo says, I don't know. Well, so I go out there. I say hi to him and shake his bad right hand when he got that shot 100 years ago.
Limp right hand.
So I bring him in my office. You know, I remember thinking as I'm walking back of the van story of the having a gun in the van. And I thought, you know what?
Has anybody searched this dude?
And Tommy, I thought, you know what?
This is my time.
I've had my life. Yeah, I've had my life.
This will be a great story.
Yeah.
My buddy's on the podcast, dude.
Funny shit if I get my head blown off in my office.
Later.
In a chief's office in Brentwood. So I call him, man. He's this typical Lowe, you know, funny, laughing. We're telling stories about the old days, you know. I asked him whether or not he killed a guy in a rug. We were just laughing, you know. It was just kind of a good half-hour visit. And he said, Joe, man, I need a job. And I said, are you straight? Because he'd only been out of jail for a week or two.
Damn.
And because I thought, you know what I mean? He had a horrible heroin habit when he was back then, you know. I said, Lowe, I can't help you if you're going to be a drug addict and you're going to not come to work and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, I'm telling you, I promise you, I will come to work when they tell me, and I'll work hard when I'm here. Can you help me find a job? I said, let me look. So he leaves, and I called Dan Gummersheimer, who was in charge of public works. I go, hey, I was honest with him. I go, here's what you're dealing with. He goes, the only thing I got is a guy that slings trash. I go, that's fine. That's perfect. You know, it's a job. It's a good job. You know, it didn't pay a ton, but got benefits.
Right.
And Lowe's health at the time was not good. You know, his health was failing him. He was... I guess years of drug abuse didn't help him. Anyway, so he does. He comes on Brentwood. He's there, I don't even remember, months, maybe a year. I don't even know what it was, you know. So there's a gal in Brentwood, and she's not well. She had mental health issues, but she's like the trash man.
She's a resident?
Yes.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
She took
hey,
a liking,
that's how shit happens. It's
she
like
took
the
a liking
boy.
To Lowe, right?
He's got, boy, trash
he's got
boy,
personality. He's got a lot of
personality. Great personality.
Right.
Anyway, they hook up, right? So... And she had been a persistent, and still is, a consistent problem in Brentwood with neighbors and things like that. She wasn't well. She's probably better now, I hope. At any rate, she liked her some Lowe, the trash man.
She liked her Lowe.
So Lowe started visiting her, all right?
All right.
So he'd go over to her house, and as I came to find out, and he has a massive heart attack after whatever they were doing in this girl's house, in this woman's house. So the Brentwood Fire Department goes over there, and they saved his life.
Oh.
D'Angelo, they saved him. They brought him back to life at the house. He was in full cardiac arrest.
This is great. I didn't know this part of the story.
So
you're the best man at his wedding now.
You didn't have to know the background story of this woman. But anyway, so they take him to the hospital, and only in D'Angelo's world, they get him to the hospital. They get him stable within hours. He's stable because of... And we have a fantastic fire department and paramedics in Brentwood. And the man walked out.
Damn.
Told him he didn't want it anymore. He said, I don't want any medical treatment. His heart's blocked up, obviously, like crazy. And he walked out of the hospital and said, I'm good. And he showed up for work the month that he was dead on the floor, like that 2 days prior. He comes to work Monday morning, starts slinging trash again.
Holy
well,
God.
At least he stood by his word not to screw you, right?
Yeah.
He says, I'll show up every day.
So he comes back to work for a few weeks, and then life ended for him.
Had another heart attack.
Had a massive heart attack.
I was up and down his whole story, man. Like, I'm rooting for the guy.
But God rest his soul, but to end that story.
You spoke at his funeral.
Well, no, but his brother. So as D'Angelo got hired on by our city, his brother also needed a job, right? So D'Angelo's brother got hired in Brentwood to sling trash, right? I don't know the guy's background. I didn't ask. But it was kind of cool because when D'Angelo died, I was going to go to his funeral, but I actually was on vacation and out of town. I was going to go, but I didn't go because I was out of town. But his mom and his brother both called me and said thanks. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that's why I just wanted to
his brother didn't have a heart attack. He's still alive?
Yeah.
Still working?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Good. Because this story was going crazy.
And I think his mom, as far as I know, his mom, who was elderly at the time, and all this, when he got out of prison, as far as I know, she's still around too.
To me, and that's and we're going to bring some more of those kind of stories to you. The other side, we've got some people that were on the other side of law enforcement that are going to come on the show and talk about their dealings with the police. And I think that's a great way. This is a great story to kind of lead into those kind of stories, because it's not all about this us against them. Sometimes, there are relationships that are built through these interviews and through what goes on in police work and on the other side, that sometimes long-time relationships are built. And I know several police officers that still are in contact with people they've locked up. And just because you were on the other side 10, 20 years ago doesn't mean you can't change your course and get things right. And a lot of these people respect the police after they've gone through it.
You know, if you treat them fairly, and if you treat them like human beings when you arrest them, and they respect you for it.
Right.
And if, I've locked up numerous people over and over again, and I've always treated them fair, and I see them on the street to this day, and they're always glad to see me and would talk to me.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a weird dynamic for officers that have been in those really strong, violent urban settings. We see the way these kids are thrown into life.
Right.
And you understand how challenging it is to come out of that kind of environment, right?
The odds are such against them to make it out of that.
So there's that piece going in that you as rationally, you know what these people have dealt with coming up as kids. And so there's always that piece of it, but I found when I was a policeman that I knew a lot of guys like D'Angelo. That, truth be told, if he had a different upbringing, we'd be sitting at the same table, maybe as a policeman,
right?
But certainly sitting at a table having a beer together,
right?
Because there was a piece of D'Angelo that was a violent, horrible person, and there was a piece of him that was a good guy.
And there was and just coming from DEA and dealing with a lot of drug cases over the years and informants and everything else. These guys are really likable people.
Can be, yeah.
They can be really and they do have a violent side, but that game, that drug game,
that's a survival side.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They have to go into a survival portion of it. And like I said, I don't mean to keep going back to the Italian mafia, but it's the same kind of concept. If you sign up for that game and you want to get into the gangs and the dope dealing, those are expected results at times. It's unfortunate. That's just the way it is. But some of these people, and I should say some, not all of them, were extremely likable. And you're going to hear stories about that throughout our podcast, that these guys, although they were very dangerous people, they were funny. I mean, they used to make me, when I sit on wires, man, some of the conversations I would listen to, they were just funny.
Right.
It's kind of a self-prophecy, though, for folks in that environment, though, because they would get in the dope game, and they would eventually involve kids around the neighborhoods, and the next thing you know, you're making another set of dope men.
Well, I won't say his name, but he was an informant that used to call all of us, and he was
345?
Like, he was
245.
But when Stanzi, and Joe can tell you the story, when Stanzi passed away, he called Joe and said he was sorry for his loss.
Absolutely. No, that 245, and the reason we called him 245, we called him 2:45, actually. Because he used to call, and then if we didn't react, because at any time an informant would do a good job, we would give him money. You know, that's just the way life was. That's how the world works.
He was documented. He was a documented informant.
So he would call, and he had great information 90% of the time.
50-50.
Yeah. He was good.
He was.
But he would, and then when you wouldn't react to his calls, so he would used to call us when we were in narcotics and MVOP at like midnight. You're like, hey, man, we're getting off. We don't want to react to your, you know, he'd say this guy's over here selling heroin. Well, then when he caught on to the fact that we wouldn't respond immediately to just a dude on the street selling heroin, he would add in that the guy had 245s. So we called him 245, and then that ended up into 2:45, so the man's name ended up to be 2:45.
I stopped him one time, or I didn't stop him, but we bunch of people stopped in a gas station, and they all sat on the curb, and I didn't recognize him at first. And he's looking at me, and I made eye contact with him, and he kept giving me the the old head nod, like, looking like,
hey, yeah, you look at that
like,
other dude.
That guy's dirty, dude. That guy's dirty. and I turn around and start laughing. I said, hey, man, we need to search this guy over here. And he was right on the money, but he kept looking at me. Give me the old.
About 6 months ago, 245 walked into the Brentwood Police Department. Walked up to the window, talked to Tom Bottini. I need to see the chief of police. He walks in, he goes, do you know this man? I said, oh, yeah, I know. He's in the lobby. He wants to see you. I said, all right. So 245 comes into my office. He goes, he called me Joe Man, too. He said, Joe Man, I got this going on in my life. I got that going on. I need some money. I'm like, I go, all right, dude, what do you need? He goes, I think he said $300. I said, which isn't a lot of money, you know.
Right. For you, it's not.
And I've known this. I've known this man for 20 years, you know. And I was like, all right, dude. I go, hang on a minute. So I had to run down to the bank.
Hey, you tell him.
You should have called. Told him to call Cruz.
I'll turn him on to my guys.
So I run down, get him $300. I come back, meet him in the parking lot. People probably thought the chief was doing a dope deal with heroin in the parking lot. I give 245 $300. And he says, Joe, man, I'm telling you, I'm gonna pay you back. I go, all right, dude. I still have it.
He'll be back. He'll be back, but it ain't gonna be to pay you. Hey, Joe, man, you got any more money?
Next time he comes see you, tell him to call us. I'll turn him on to my guys.
He was another guy. 245 was another guy that he was hard not to like. He was just one of them dudes.
And I can tell you, and we'll get into stories about my time at DEA and the guys and the informants we used to run. We're just likable guys that they stuck their neck out for us, but they also had something to lose, too. You know,
it's good to put them sides of the fence, too.
Right. And, you know, we're going to have some of them on. I've got two people we're going to have on that I know that have come from the other side of the fence that it'll be interesting. So those are good, quick stories. We are running out of camera time, so we are out of here. And always remember, communities that support law enforcement are safer places to live. Peace.
Peace out.